namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So I'm on in this class from the Bhagavatam is 10th canto, chapter 10, text 23. This chapter is titled Deliverance of the Yamala Arjun Trees. Sri Sukha Hovacha. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Cheva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvati Vyasa. Tato Jaya Madurait. Nasta Payeswa Bhadresu. Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Sloke. Bhakti Bhavaiti Naistiki. So text 23. Sisuka Hovacha. Evam Uktva. Sa. Devarishi. Gato. Narayana Sramam. Nalakovara Manigriva Asatu Yamala Juno Sisuka Hoacha Evam Uktva Sadevarshi Gato Narayana Shramam Nalako Varamani Griva Asato Yamalajuna Sisuka Huacha Evamuktva Sadevarshi Gato Narayana Shramam Nalako Varamani Griva Sato Yamalajuna Sisuka Huacha Evam Uktva Sadevarshi Gato Narayana Shramam Nalako Varmani Griva Asatu Yamalajuna
Thank you.
So, word for word translation? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace's Confounded Child, Srila Bhajan Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Maharaj Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Can it come forward? So that we can get your prasanga. Sri Sukaho Acha. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued to speak. Evam Ukpa. Thus uttering. Saha. He. Devarshi. The greatest sinly person. Narada. Gataha left that place. Narayan Ashramam for his own ashram, known as Narayan Ashram. Nalakuvara, Manigriva, and Manigriva. Asatu remain there to become Yamala Arjuna, twin Arjun trees. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashram known as Narayan Ashram, and Nalakuvara and Manigriva became twin Arjun trees. Please respond and repeat. Sukadeva Goswami continued, having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashram known as Narayan Ashram, and Nalakuvara and Manigriva became twin Arjun trees. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnana Jnana Salakaya Satsuran Militam Jena Tasman Jikove Namaha. So, all protocols observed. We are continuing a discussion on the deliverance of Sri Arjun, the Yamala Arjun trees. We've been hearing the whole of this discussion from previous speakers, and one common trait that we find in the life of the sinly persons is that their attitude even to the sinful person is different. Because we find that even the yogis, they curse people. Sinly person is also cursing someone. So, what's the difference? Narada, he is the saint among the demigods. He himself is cursing someone. Why? He's a sinly person, he's a pure devotee. Why should he even curse someone? If even someone is degraded, why should he curse him? Because you find people like Duvas and Moni also. If you read the Vedic literature, I mean, the whole thing is just full of Duvas and Moni always cursing someone. When he gets angry, he curses someone. And it's devastating. And therefore, we find that, basically, we say these yogis, these non-devotee yogis, they don't have control over their anger. That is why if they get infuriated and they lose their equilibrium, and then they go out to met out their venom on people, and it could be very devastating.
But here we find that a pure devotee like Narada is also causing meting out some vermin to someone, to Nalakovera and Manigriva. And keep in mind that these are children of, should I say, the financial director of the heavenly planet. Financial director of the heavenly planet. Children of big guys, children of big people, nobody cares, I mean, nobody dares do anything with them. What you can do is to go and report to their father, to their parents. But Nara didn't care. And his intention was purely of devotional orientation. Now, the mindset is different. When the pure devotee is even angry, the mindset is different. Idea is to be able to create a difference in the life of the so-called sinner. There's a common axiom in biblical tradition that we should hate the sin, not the sin. We should hate the sin, not the sinner. So this is the undertone of Narada's action. Because when even he cursed these two gentlemen who were intoxicated because of having taken some varuni. And you know, when someone is intoxicated, I mean, the person has lost control of his senses. That is why in most cases you find that people who are taking intoxicants, they are unpredictable. You can't say what they're going to do the next moment because they are overwhelmed by some extrinsic factors. And these factors, these variables are completely beyond the jurisdiction. If you take intoxication, you are completely out of yourself. No control. And keep in mind that the conditioned soul is already intoxicated. With what? Brahmacharis. The conditioned soul is intoxicated with what?
Lust.
Yes. Got it. The conditioned soul is already intoxicated with lust. And now he takes some other intoxication. Oh, it goes bizarre. Why do we say that the conditioned soul is already intoxicated with lust? Because Arjuna complained about this type of intoxication to Lord Krishna. He said, there are certain things I don't want to do. I want to execute my service. I want to perform my favor. But it seems there are things that are acting, that are impacting on me, and I'm acting beyond, they are completely beyond my jurisdiction. It seems as if I'm forced to do certain things. Why is that? So it is only someone who is intoxicated who is forced to do certain things that traditionally, if it's normal, he wouldn't do. So the conditioned soul is already intoxicated. The baruni is just a small intoxicant. When you compare it to the original intoxication that the conditioned soul has been addicted to for millions and billions of lifetimes. If one becomes intoxicated now of some alcohol or some spirit, just some few hours, he gets over it. He goes to sleep. He sleeps for a long time and it's over. But this intoxication, this lust, if even you go to sleep and you wake up, it's still glaring at you. That intoxication, it doesn't go away with sleep. Other things, varuni, other spirits, you can do away with it. But the point here is, Narada being a devotee imbued with karunika, mercy, he sees this two gentlemen and he was having internal dialogue. He was contemplating, thinking what to do with these guys. It took him time to... He didn't just see them, and then he said, oh, come on, you become trees. I don't know, I was analyzing the other day, I mean, the internal dialogue of Nada. He got one step after the other, and then he went on, and then he concluded the best thing to do to these guys is to give them mercy. So sometimes the mercy, we don't seem to see it from the proper perspective. And then again, if even we get the mercy, sometimes we don't even realize that it is mercy. Sometimes it could be difficult to figure out whether it is mercy or not. But inasmuch as one is endeavoring a devotional service, one is basically under the eternal potency of the Lord, and they accept one who is not following the tradition. If one is following the tradition 10%, then basically even whatever that happens in one's life, it should be understood as Krishna's arrangement for a speedy purification. So here, we'll find that Narada, after passing through all of this, his own internal dialogue, and he concluded, best thing is to give these guys mercy. They are nude here. And they don't even realize that they are nude. They are so much covered over by the illusory energy. So, he came to the conclusion that he has to subject them to the sun, the rain, the snow, all type of weather condition. And what is best for that type of body, by dint of the gentleman, their attitude, it simply shows their mentality. It's only trees who are nude. Trees, they don't go to the shopping mall to get some pajama suit or some sneakers or some jeans or no winter wear, no summer wear. They're just like that. Therefore, Nada thought this is best suited for these guys, and he made them to have the bodies of trees. But then the whole idea is that they meet Lord Krishna face to face. He blessed them. Now, traditionally, when a conditioned soul curses a person, if we are angry, and when we are angry, we don't wish the perceived offender, I mean, we don't wish him well. We want to see that he is cast into a dungeon or she is cast into a dungeon. A perpetual suffering. Perhaps he or she is completely exterminated. He's finished with in this world. But the pure devotee doesn't think like that. Therefore, if even someone becomes an offender, the mindset of the pure devotee is, how can I help this person? Therefore, even the chastisement given to the conditioned soul by a pure devotee is actually meant for his purification. Because at the bottom of his heart, he is actually trying to see how best to help this person to get closer to Krishna. Now, it's a different scenario with the ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, we'll find that the pure devotees of the Lord, they are like moving theaters. Wherever they go, their whole intention is to be able to pervade the whole atmosphere with favorable loving relationships in the service of the Lord. Therefore, another morning, he placed these two gentlemen, Nalagriva and Nalakubera, in the bodies of trees. But then the whole idea is that they meet with Lord Krishna face to face. Now, how many people on this planet are going to meet with Lord Krishna face to face at some point in time? That is the very reality. So, the punishment of the pure devotee, so-called punishment, is actually a blessing. And if even the pure, even the devotee of the Lord, if even is punished, if even someone curses him, he doesn't really care. We find in the case of Chitraketu. So, somehow or the other, the living entity is finding himself in different scenarios. But then the whole idea is that one, when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, or when one becomes a Vaishnava practitioner, we have to be able to see every situation we pass through as a blessing from the Lord. In fact, this is the assertion of Lord Brahma in the Bhagavatam itself. That we may experience difficulties in our lives, but that does not imply that we've been abandoned by the Lord. Whatever difficulty we pass through is simply an iota. It's just a fraction, a minuscule aspect of the major thing we're supposed to pass through. Jai Sri Sridhar Manan Mohan, Jai Sri Sridhar Lakshman Mangu. It's good and time. And therefore, a devotee is very much conscious of the Lord's mercy. And sometimes we find also in the lives of the devotee and the pure devotee that sometimes a disciple is chastised, and then the disciple doesn't understand that he's being chastised for his own good. And then the more one becomes advanced, one actually wants some chastisement instead of praise, because the praise can lead one into trouble. But the chastisement keeps one very humble. And so, whichever way we encounter, we have to understand that this is the mercy of the Lord. And what does the mercy of the Lord imply? It implies we are being pushed to meet with Lord Krishna. Whatever way we pass, whatever that we encounter, we should understand that we are being pushed to meet with Lord Krishna in this lifetime. Sometimes we are in devotional service and we begin to think, well, in this life I'm not going to make it. Maybe it's another life. But you see, that is a self-defeat philosophy. It's self-defeat philosophy. If you defeat yourself already, then you're not going to get the self-motivation that is required to be able to excel in your endeavor. Because self-motivation is the prime principle for excellence. But if we already defeat ourselves with the conception that I can't make it in this life, then we already defeated. And it's not a good deal. It is not a good deal. It's a very negative mindset that we have to put in the dustbin. Because we find that anyone can actually approach the Lord if the person is serious. The cloth you're putting on is not even the problem. The ashram you are is not the problem. Inasmuch as you are focused on the instructions of the Guru, on the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. If you are a Vaishnava practitioner, why not? You will attend Krishna. So, we have to remind ourselves about the great opportunity that Prabhupada has created for us. It looks like a joke. Every day we have to get up to come to Mangarati, and every day we have to come to do greet the deities and sit down in the class. Why we have to sit down in the class? We could just sit down in our homes and prepare for different activities of the day. But why? Because we understand that it's just by sitting down in the class to listen to the Bhagavatam, we get purified. And therefore, it is a very important factor in our lives we have to understand the principles behind all of these episodes in the Bhagavatam. They could just be like narratives to people in general, but there are basic moral and spiritual undertones in all of the episodes of the Bhagavatam. And so here Nada is bringing us an understanding how the type of mindset we should have when we are dealing with people. If even someone does something wrong, we should think, how can I help this person? How can I help this person? It's not, oh, Bhakta Devi, you're just a rascal. But so if you say you're just a rascal, how have you helped him? And therefore, all of us, we are all supposed to be leaders. Because everyone here is the preacher. Somehow or the other, everyone is a preacher. And a teacher is a leader. That's what the Bhagavatam says. A teacher is a leader. It's not somebody, it's not just the GBC. You may say, Anutama is the leader. No, but everyone in our movement is a leader. Because according to the Bhagavatam, a teacher is a leader. And we are all teaching. We are all going out to preach. Somehow or the other, we are preaching. So we are supposed to be leaders. And the leader is one who is simply out there to motivate people. The members of his constituency may not be perfected in their endeavor to serve the Lord. And his duty is to see how to motivate them. It's just like a father or a mother. The duty is to see how to motivate the child. So the child may do something wrong. And even the parent may spank the child or may say something harsh. But what is the idea? Is to make the child a dependable person in the future. To invoke values in the child. And so in a similar way, we have to see how best we're utilizing our proper giving intelligence. Papa has given us this intelligence. Otherwise, ordinarily speaking, we're not qualified to talk about the Vedic tradition. In fact, the Vaishnava tradition, we're not qualified. Because it takes a Vipra to become a Vaishnava. So, here Narada has finished his business. He has done justice. Done. You know, when you do some things on the computer, then there's a footnote. Done. Narada has done his business. He's finished his business. He's done. He's done. But he has to leave. So he left for his ashram. He described in the purport, described in his very brief purport, how the beauty of Narada's ashram. You know, the saintly person, they live in serene places, in the forest, in the jungles, so that they don't have any disturbance. In the cities, you find that nowadays there is no night. Night or day, it's the same disturbance. Because the people are working 24 hours. The factories are working 24 hours. So the saintly person they choose to be in a forest or even in the mountains, because the mountains, the forest is described in the Bhagavatam as a place in the mood of goodness, where spiritual cultivation could easily be perfected. You don't have any disturbances here and there. And so you find that the sages of yore, they stay in the Himalayas or in the caves, in the forest. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, Ajun trees are still found in many forests. And their skin is used by cardiologists to prepare medicine for her trouble. You know, trees, most of the medicines we take, they're from trees, plants, herbs. So this is amazing. Well, you see the Vedas are completely, they are replete with every domain of knowledge. There's a conference coming in India. Some of my friends, professors from Delhi, they organized a conference and they want me to come. And this last time when we were in University of Pondicherry, the program they had was integrating spirituality with organizational leadership. And now they have another program in Delhi, at the University of Delhi, integrating spirituality with mathematical science. And you know, these professors, when they start dealing about, you know, Vedic mathematics, I'm amazed. So I'm completely enchanted. I want to go to that conference and then see the Vedic mathematics. So sometimes we think that there are some things that we can learn outside of the Vedas. The point is because there is no proper exploration of the Vedic literature. So here they're talking about sutras and all this other stuff that are purely of mathematical symbols. And so here in the purport, we are getting some gleams into the field of medicine or the field of pharmacy or pharmacology or whatever. How? Arjun trees, according to Prabhupada, are used for medicine, are used by cardiologists to prepare medicines for the heart. Can you imagine that? And now, of course, there are a lot of explorations in the Ayurvedic medicine. And this Ayurvedic medicine, there are medicines that you take without any side effects. In chemotherapy or modern medicine, take for instance, if you have some high blood pressure, and then the medication you receive will increase your journey to Yamaloka. It will deal with that. It's so-called addressing a particular situation, but then the side effects it speeds up your journey to to Yamaloka. But you know, Ayurvedic medicine, they have no side effect at all. And so it's a matter of people really exploring these areas. I remember one devotee was mentioning to me one medicine he's taking. And then even that, he said that even after 2 years he has to stop it because the ailment goes, high blood pressure. Then he said it goes and it goes forever. Not that, I mean, you stop taking the dose and it comes back again. So he told me the name of the medicine. And he bought it here in the U.S. So, they're exploring different areas from the Vedic literature. And even things like mathematics, it's all there. Engineering is all there. Remember the other day, we were reading from the Bhagavatam, that was even so amazing. In twin birth, you know, the person who actually was conceived first becomes the last person to be born. Prabhu, you heard of that? In twin birth, the person, the first conceived, who is supposed to be the senior, he becomes the last person to come. He becomes the junior. He becomes the junior. But he's going to be the last person to be delivered. So we know we are very busy, but we should also find some busyness with the Bhagavatam because it's full of nourishment. And each time we get new information in the Bhagavatam, it gives us a lot of excitement and it keeps us happy. In fact, the scholars, I know a number of scholars, they are not married because their whole life they are busy researching, and it gives them joy, you know. It just gives them joy, getting new information, new knowledge and all this. It just gives them joy. So they don't have any business with so-called material sense gratification, but their sense gratification is just exploring new domains of knowledge. So also, when we read the Bhagavatam, we get so much of nourishment that will not be sidetracked from the path of devotional service. And there are a lot of things to explore in the Bhagavatam. And so, we'd like to stop here. Maybe there are some comments or some questions. Again, thank you very much for coming. And yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You said that lust is a kind of intoxication that doesn't go away
when you go to sleep.
Yes.
And you wake up. I mean, it doesn't go away when you go. You just go and sleep. Because other intoxications, if you take some wine or spirit, you can deal with it. Even a psychedelic drug, you just go to sleep for several hours or several days. By the time you wake up, the whole effect is gone. But the intoxication of lust, it does. You don't go to sleep and it goes away.
But what should we do to make it go away?
Oh, you transform into love of God in devotional service. You transform into love of God and in devotional service. By serving Lord Krishna, this goes away. I mean, it goes away. It doesn't go away. It changes because it's an energy. Energy cannot be destroyed. That it could be transmuted. It's transmuted into love of God.
Thank you.
And that is why a devotee should understand why they have to do services. Because if you don't do services, you're simply inviting trouble. If you don't chant, you're simply inviting trouble. If you don't wake up to come to Mangarati, you're simply inviting trouble. Especially if you're living in the temple. Because those who are living in the temple, they have ample opportunity to speed up their spiritual progress. But then I go to places and I see even people who live all the way they left India to come to America, and they live in the temple, and they never see them for Mangarati, you know. I've been to temples where I saw them. You don't see them for Mangarati. You only see them when they come and go to the altar. I've seen that some places I went to. I saw that. I think one of them came here. So I was speaking to him that you left India and came all the way here. People who in America here, who are PhDs, who are doctors, they are very strong in the southerner. They are walking outside, but then they wake up early in the morning to do their japa, do their arti, they go out, do their work, and come back. And you are living in the temple here. You came all the way from my airport, living in the temple here. Nobody will see you. So he felt very bad. But I mean, I said, look, I'm telling you this because my spiritual master told me to help the young devotees in our movement. So don't think that, I mean, I'm just talking, I'm being hard with you. But so he understood. He said, Maharaj, no, I'm not thinking about that. What you mentioned to me is the reality, and then I said, I'll try to see how I can improve. Because if some opportunity is given to us and we don't take proper advantage, opportunity could be taken away from us. If someone gives you a limousine, he'll be happy when he comes, he sees you riding it. Isn't it?
Yeah.
If someone gives you a t-shirt, the person will be happy when he sees you wear. If you don't use it, he will not have any intention to give you another thing next time. So we should take advantage of this human life. Bhagavatam says, Sukham Andreyakam Detya Deha Yogina Dehina. This so-called enjoyment we are looking for in this world is available for all species of life. It's available for all species of life. But as devotees, we should be strategic thinkers. We should plan our lives properly, our daily lives, our yearly lives, our monthly lives. We should plan it properly. But we should also have some contingency plans so that we don't become like straitjacket thinkers. This is what I want to do. What happens if that fails? I want to wake up. Also, if I want to wake up tomorrow for Mangarati, then I shouldn't eat at 11 o'clock in the night. If I eat at 11 o'clock in the night, then I say, I think I'm going to wake up tomorrow. It's a joke. So we have to plan properly.
Yes, Mataji wanted to say something.
Thank you for such an insight, especially your point about how the sufferings that we experience are pushing us to meet Krishna face to face at the end of life. That's very profound. And I just wanted to ask you, sometimes a devotee may be working very hard to try to make the temple better or try to make ISKCON better, but there's so many things that go wrong, obstacles that come. And so the devotee might be thinking, well, why doesn't Krishna help out a little bit? Why doesn't Krishna cooperate? I mean, I'm trying to make this town better, I'm trying to make the temple better, but every direction, block, 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 obstacle, failure, failure, failure. So the devotee is a... what should the attitude be?
Yeah, that's a good point. You see, devotional service is full of challenges. And we should not have, again, we should not have a defeat mentality when we face with challenges. Because even amongst Lord Krishna's intimate friends, they have terrible challenges. One time, Lord Krishna told one of his cowherd boyfriends, please go get Radharani here. And Radharani is, as you know, she's always under check by the mother-in-law. And then giving that type of instruction is like, you know, a devotee feeling, I've been given an impossible task. Why? So the same thing, we are trying to ameliorate a situation. We see some deteriorating situation and we want to ameliorate. By our own personal efforts, we put in the energy there, we put in the energy this way. But then we'll find that the things are not going in the way we want. There are so many challenges. Then we begin to think, why is Krishna not intervening? If Krishna intervenes, who will do the service? So, the point is, Krishna is always intervening, but he wants to see how he uses us to get the credit. He's always there to be able to see. In fact, if we don't even do anything, take for instance, if all of us here in this temple, in this Vaishnava community here in Potomac, if all of us, all the devotees say, to hell with ISKCON, no more. We are living. I see, just maybe in less than 3 days, in less than 3 days, Radha Madana Mohan, C.C. Sitaram Lakshman, Hanuman, C.C. Goranitai, they will arrange devotees from nowhere to fill up this gap. The Krishna, what he wants to do is that he wants to give us the credit. And the credit comes with some anxiety, some challenges. Take the case of Arjuna. He was there on the battlefield, but the whole of his life was replete with anxieties. And this is Krishna's devotee. Krishna told him, you just do the necessary thing and get the credit. If you relent to fight, you are the loser. You get a discredit. If you fight, good. These people you are seeing, they are already dead. They are already killed. They have already been killed. But I want you to get the credit. But you see that Arjuna was having so much of challenges. Yet Krishna was at the background. If you see the life of Prabhupada, I know Prabhupada was aboard the Jaladutta, he was facing so much of challenges, health challenges. This is the person that is coming to establish an international movement for the Supreme Personality of God, Lord Krishna. And he almost died aboard the Jaladutta. He had terrible challenges. In fact, at some point in time, he was so much, you know, in a bad shape in terms of his health. But then again, Krishna, just to show his support for him,
He appeared to him in a dream. Then, you know, that he should just move on. So we may have challenges, but we shouldn't relent in our efforts. I'm talking in the case of how Krishna told one of his Kaya boyfriends to go and bring Radharani. Now, it was so complex a situation that it's just an instruction. Finish. Krishna left him there. He has to think out. He has to cogitate some. He has to generate some ideas on what to do to get Radharani out from the house. He devised means of doing that. So, we have to work with the details that we generate. We have to do the internal dialogue. Like Narada Muni, he was having an internal dialogue, trying to figure out what is the best thing to do to salvage the situation. But even Narada, he was having some internal challenge there. Because if he was not having any challenge, then immediately he would have just done something. But he was having an internal dialogue. He was contemplating. He was figuring out what is best to be done. So we gave him fine. The Kaya boy, he went to the room and deceived. He went to Radharani's mother-in-law. And then she was out there at the house. So he told her, I'm looking for my calf. Can I go into your barn to check for my calf? I said, you rascal, go in and don't waste any time. He just come out quickly, okay? So he went in. But you see that type of challenge? I mean, it's a big risk. Because if he's caught, Kamsa will hear about it. And when Kamsa deals with your case, you're in trouble. So he went in, but then, to be able to meet Radharani, he gave Radharani the message. Radharani said, but that's not possible to go out here. You know the situation. So again, he devised some other means. He picked the calf from the bath, and then he said, all right, you go, let's change clothes, give me a sari, and then take my dhoti, and then they exchange. Now this is what? Generation of ideas meant for a change, a spiritual change. So then, there was a change of dress. Radharani has to go out like the cowherd boy who came. Now he told him, I think he said Madhu Mangal or Subal, I can't remember exactly which of them. Subal, okay. And he told her that, all right, you use the calf and put it on your chest so that she doesn't see the breast. Because, I mean, when you put the calf on your chest, you're covered. Then you just go out. Then again, there's another problem there. How is he going to go out? Subal himself, how is he going to go out? So Radharani succeeded in going out. That this is all geared towards, you know, serving Lord Krishna, giving Krishna pleasure. So we are trying to see how the temple is in a good shape, is to be able to give Krishna pleasure. But there are challenges. We should not give in to the challenges. Because the challenges we face are just the stepping stones we have to cross over, we have to pass through to be able to catch up with Krishna. If everything goes too rosy, what will we count on as our own effort? What will we remember as our own hard struggles? What will be our own internal leela in terms of our service to the Lord? At least we should have something to reflect. Huh, that was really tough. That was difficult to deal with. But I did it anyway. Let me tell you a story. In Africa, you know, some devotees got shot in Liberia during the war, during the civil war there, including one white Mataji. Yeah. And at that time, the war was still on in Liberia. And Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Maharaj, she told me to go to Liberia to investigate what really happened. And when I was to go, even the devotees in Ivory Coast, because I went to Ivory Coast first, that's the next country to Liberia. And when I went there, I slept there for 2 or 3 days. I think 2 days. Even the temple president was discouraging me that I shouldn't go. But I said, oh, you're talking about death. Oh, that would be a glorious death. If I had to go and die there, that would be a glorious death, because I would die in the process of trying to do some service to please my spiritual master. So he backed out. And then I went there. I know what I did not go with a return ticket. I raised money on Sankirtan there in a war-torn country to move out to the next country. You see, if we see devotional service as simply a thing or a situation where we expect, you know, serenity all the time, there's no trouble, we should never even have any flu or headache, then I think we miss the point. Because the culture itself, I remember a case where Prabhupada sent one sannyasi to one country, I can't remember precisely, and the sannyasi came back to complain to him, that place is just full of Maya. That would be too difficult for me. So Prabhupada said, you go, if even you fall down, I will come and take you at the time of death. There's a long story after that. What happened? It actually Prabhupada came to take that devotee. So, we shouldn't think that this movement, it is some material arrangement. Whatever effort we put in here, it's a glorious effort. And these are the things that will pave the way for our glorious end. So we do the needful, and Krishna will actually compliment. We should just keep doing what we need to do, and Krishna will compliment. Because even on our own, we can't make the credit. We cannot make the credit. But you just see how an ordinary professor, even in PhD programs, how an ordinary professor wants his students to excel. To the point that everything they want you to do, they will give you an example. They'll give an example. Why? Because they don't want you to fail. They want you to excel. So Krishna also wants us to excel. If an ordinary professor is so-called compassionate, what about Lord Krishna? Now, Lord Krishna's compassion comes in different ways. And in case of Arjuna, we should always reflect upon that. How he wanted Arjuna to fight, to kill his own. What could be more challenging than that? Somebody says, your mentor says you should go and kill your own kismet. it could be too devastating. But he encouraged that job. So Krishna is also encouraging us. Somehow the other is encouraging us in different ways. And we should know that whatever we are doing to be able to improve the quality of the devotees, to improve the quality of the standard of Prabhupada's movement, Krishna is always helping us to do what is required to be able to pave way. So these other minor challenges that we may have, we shouldn't actually, you know, bother so much about that, knowing that those are the stepping stones we have to pass through to be able to get the recognition of Lord Krishna. So we should be courageous. We should be courageous, and then we should have self-motivation. We should be equipped with knowledge. And keep in mind, the knowledge we have, if we apply that with our own experience, that makes us wise. Wisdom simply means experience plus acquired application of acquired knowledge. Application of acquired knowledge plus experience is equal to wisdom. It's a very simple arithmetic code, simple formula. And so we have all so much of experience, and what we hear from the sources, we should always, you know, apply that understanding, and we will not actually be so much worried with whatever that happens in our own lives, whatever challenges we pass through. Hare Krishna. I don't know whether I've been able to address the question. All right, so in the absence of any other thing, we'd like to adjourn this meeting. So thank you very much for coming. Jai Sri Sri Radha Mandana Mohan Kreja. Sri Sitaram Lakshmi Mohan Kreja. Sri Gaurani Tai Kreja.